Quaker.com podcast. Today is Thursday, March 22nd, 2012, and this is podcast number 122. Kai's back with us. We're probably going to be a little clumsy today because we're not really all that organized. We don't have like notes and stuff like that. We're just kind of winging it here. But
got to get back in the habit after
yeah,
a month of not doing podcasts with you.
Yeah. So, and it's nice to have you back, Kai.
Thank you. Thank you to everyone who sent me all the well wishes, and I appreciated it.
You got a thing in the mail that we've been making fun of.
I did. We've been mercilessly teasing. Well, firstly, we got to start out with, the ever-present. It's so funny because of all of the things that non-anarchists will point out or could point out in all of the wide palette of things,
the thing they always
seem to fall back on is, well, what would you do about the roads? And, you know, how would there be roads? And so I thought it particularly funny. I got a thing in the mail that the front page says, how to survive a collapsed bridge. And then it says that this is inspired by Speaker of the House, John Boehner. Boehner? Boehner? Is
yeah,
it Boehner?
Like
I don't know, something. And so apparently...
One thief is the same as the next. Jesse James, I don't know, whatever.
I don't know. Apparently, it has details on how to evacuate a sinking car, which are wrong.
Well, it says try to roll your window down.
Well, yeah. Yeah, well, it says roll your window down before you go underwater.
Unbuckle
because,
your seatbelt.
You know, all that. But it says if you can't open the window, if you can't roll the window down, then you should smash a side window with, like, a flashlight or kick it, which... Mythbusters proved was wrong.
Once it's underwater, you can't kick
the window out. So I thought that was funny that, you know, they were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says that, you know, it goes on to say that more than a quarter of bridges are structurally deficient or functionally obsolete, which...
That can't be. Don't we have a government?
Right? But the government takes care of the roads.
Doesn't the state do all that for us?
Surely fascism will provide us roads quite well.
Oh.
After all, how could we possibly have roads if the government didn't provide them for us?
Perhaps the problem is when the bridges start to fall apart, we don't have enough government.
Right.
We need more government.
We should do that because the answer is always that the government should just throw stolen money at it.
Yeah. We should have more theft, more thievery, more taxes.
You know, I've always known thieves to keep their stolen objects in good repair. They always seem to take very good care of their stolen objects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like when they steal a car and go for a joyride in it.
Yeah, well, they're always they always lock the car afterwards.
Yeah, they're very careful to polish it, clean it real nice.
Yeah.
You know, and a joyride in a car, a thief and a joyride in a car is a good way of thinking of government.
Mm-hmm.
They are a bunch of, you know, 17-year-olds in a stolen car with a full tank of gas and absolutely no concerns of ever, ever, ever being caught.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they own the police.
Right? And what are you going to do? Take them to court? They own the courts.
Oh. Yeah, it is funny that, because that's basically a political flyer telling mm-hmm. us to get after this guy and try to get him to spend more money on government roads because he's trying to cut back on
right.
some budgetary thing.
Right.
He's trying to, and the reality is, okay, so if like the budget is 100 and they're spending 270, he's trying to really be conservative and cut back the budget by cutting back to like 202.
Right.
There's still that much over budget.
Right.
But that's being conservative. That's cutting.
Right.
But when you
well, and I find it hysterical because, you know, the liberals scream bloody murder mm. if they try to raise taxes.
Yeah.
And then the Republicans mm-hmm. scream bloody murder if you try to spend.
Yeah.
And it's like, one of the two of you has got to give. You can't have it both ways.
But that's the thing of it. They present this false dichotomy where
yeah.
the whole thing is they want to keep you from thinking about the fact that they're stealing from you.
Right.
And the argument itself is a moot point. It's like two thieves have you in an alley and they're in the process of robbing you. And they let you decide, should we rob all of your cash? Looks like you have $500 in your wallet. And I think we should take all 500 of your dollars and we should buy some new jewelry for me and a new hat for my buddy here, the other thief.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thief is like, no, that's not good at all. What we have to do is take his $500 and buy me a new pair of trousers and buy you a hat. And that, and you're like, well, just don't rob me.
Right.
And they're like, no, listen now, you decide which of us needs the hat.
Right.
It doesn't matter. You're
yeah.
robbing me. Well, I don't care if I have a decision
or not.
And
then they point out,
me.
You know, they point out, well, we're not robbing the rich enough.
Yeah.
They're attacking the middle class too much. They're not robbing the rich enough. Well, thieving is thieving. I don't care if you're robbing from a rich guy or a poor guy. It is immoral to rob. It is immoral to steal from people. So I don't care how much money I have. Don't take any from me.
It's always funny, too, back on the roads thing. They're like, well, how would we have money for the roads if we didn't rob you through taxes? Well, you know, if you didn't take 60, 70, 80% of our income as mm-hmm. it is, we might have a little extra money for things like roads.
Right.
You know? Maybe if we weren't spending literally billions of dollars to bomb mud huts in a place where the people have no idea what America is.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if we weren't doing that mm-hmm. with all the stolen tax money and that money were in my pocket,
or you know,
I could afford to build my own road.
Giving guns to drug
yeah.
cartels in yeah. Mexico.
Yeah, giving drugs too, but giving guns to drug cartels and then asking for money to fight the drug cartels.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good use of tax money right there.
Right.
I'm glad they're robbing me for that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that seems legitimate. That seems like a legitimate use of my... Yeah, I'll gladly give towards... You know, and I talk to people all the time, and I'm like, okay, you are not comfortable without the government providing the roads.
Mm-hmm.
And you find it acceptable for the government to take a portion of your paycheck to fund roads.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't you then just give a portion of your paycheck to the company that funds the roads? I mean, like, I'm comfortable giving a portion of my paycheck to X, Y, and Z grocery store.
Right.
Because they provide me with food.
Right.
So why can this not be a voluntary setup? Why does this have to be at the point of a gun?
When, Uber billionaire Warren Buffett not long ago made the statements that that he wasn't paying enough taxes and that even his secretary wasn't paying, you know, enough taxes. Mm-hmm. And he felt that he wasn't getting taxed enough and that the government should do something about this. Now, of course, it was just a publicity stunt.
Right.
That's all it was. But a lot of conservatives saw right through this and they were like, dude, give more.
Right.
Shut your mouth. write a check.
Right.
That's all you have to do.
Right.
Nobody's keeping you. There's actually an IRS form, and he has tax people.
Right.
So they would know this.
Right.
But there's an actual IRS form. You just fill it out and you say, hey, I want to donate this amount of money to my taxes. Mm-hmm. You can do that. It's mm-hmm. perfectly legal. And there's a form to provide it in mm-hmm. order to do that, because probably there's somebody dumb enough to do that.
Right.
But you don't see Warren Buffett doing that.
No.
Because no matter what his lies are that he says to the cameras and the microphones, the fact is he's not an idiot.
Right.
And he realizes that every nickel that we give to government is a wasted nickel. The difference is he's one
less
of these
than a wasted nickel. It's a directly harming people nickel.
It is. The only difference between Warren Buffett and his billions and us and our tiny little paychecks is that a good portion of Warren Buffett's money actually comes from the government mm-hmm. in one form of subsidy or another, Monsanto.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And speaking of which, we were driving in the automobile today and driving along in the automobile. Our younger people won't have any idea the song I was just quoting. But anyway, so we're driving along. And we're driving from where we are in Springboro, Ohio, going towards Dayton, Ohio. And as I've said many times, Dayton, Ohio is kind of a burnt out shell of a city, mm-hmm. a leftover of the Rust Belt and the former boom of technology in the mm-hmm. in the 1900s. It's really in decline. And on our way, as part of the journey, we drive right past the Dayton Mall, mm-hmm. which at one time was the booming, you know, like back in the 90s.
Right.
The Dayton Mall was the booming place in this whole area. But
which the Dayton Mall is not actually in Dayton, but, you know.
Yeah. But, and which if it was, it wouldn't have been booming because
right.
Dayton's
there's
dying.
There's nothing in Dayton that's booming.
But it wasn't that long ago that the mm-mm. Dayton Mall was well,
yeah,
expanding.
Yeah, I mean, even when I worked mm-hmm. at the mall, there yeah. was, they were starting to do a little bit of shuffle you here, mm-hmm. you know, but probably 90% mm-hmm. of it was full.
Yeah.
Which is no longer the case.
Yeah. It's dying. And during the big bubble in 2006, 2007, 2008, they expanded the mall dramatically. Mm-hmm. They spent a ton of money and really expanded it out dramatically. Mm-hmm. And then 2008 hit, 2009 hit, and shop after shop after shop starts disappearing.
Yep.
And the mall starts to slowly die as yep. we see malls all around us. The ones in Middletown. Have you seen that one in Middletown
yeah.
is just shriveling up?
The zombie training ground?
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the Dayton Mall is dying. So as you're driving towards the Dayton Mall, the strange thing is there's a small airport that's just outside of Springboro. And from the area of that airport all the way to the Dayton Mall, there's a huge boom in industrial construction, mm-hmm. in professional buildings.
And putting in shopping centers.
Freestanding shopping centers, big office complexes.
Where they've taken deserted shopping centers and they've torn them down and starting to build new mm-hmm. stuff. And
right on that one corner, that continuous flow intersection, ugh. One of these days I'm going to do a whole podcast on that intersection.
Well,
because that
you
is
gotta
just
wait
a
till,
height.
Have you checked Google Maps? Because the Google Map car was running all around in that
really?
Area.
I'll have to look and see if it's
updated.
A couple
months ago.
I have held off doing a podcast on this continuous flow intersection. Because Google hadn't updated yet.
The continuous stop intersection.
Yeah. And if I described it without some visuals and without some evidence,
people wouldn't believe you.
No, they'd think, well, Ben's lying. Because
yeah.
it's so stupid. It's so unbelievably stupid.
It literally has traffic cross oncoming traffic.
Yeah, multiple times over and over. Yeah, just for a pedestrian to get from one side of the street to the other, you have to go through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and this is just on one mm-hmm. to get from the east side to the west side.
Yeah.
5 different crosswalks with 5 different stop go signs for the pedestrian.
Yep.
That's just for the pedestrian.
Yeah.
And he's got it lucky.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'll have to check Google Earth and see if that's been updated, and maybe I can do a whole mockumentary on that one intersection. But anyway, but that's not the point. But there's a ton of construction going on all the way from this small airport all the way up to the Dayton Mall, including a big hotel, brand new hotel they're putting in right across the street from the Dayton Mall.
Which is dying.
As the Dayton Mall dies, a brand new big hotel is being put in. Now, this is not in a convenient spot off the freeway.
Nope.
It's not around a lot of business. That's,
nope.
You know, and so what's causing this stimulus of, you know, this building boom that's taking place when there's businesses closing all around?
Yeah.
National Cash Register, NCR, is announcing layoff after layoff.
Yep.
A big LexisNexis is moving overseas.
Yep.
A lot of their people are moving out.
That big, the borders closed there.
The retail stores
yep.
are closing down. And so why is it that these people are building with such vigor when the area is dying? We've already overbuilt in the housing market. There's
yep.
empty houses. There's houses for sale just in this housing area that we're in here. You go down the street and there's empty houses and houses for sale.
Yep.
And this is middle to upper middle class.
Yep.
And you literally have an empty house that sat there for a year.
Yep.
You know, bank repossessions in this kind of a neighborhood. And so why are these people building like this? And the answer is because as Mises, I make fun of Rothbard sometimes because all these different economists, they can't see my hands.
They can't see your hands.
All these different economists, each one has their own sort of flavor. Each one has their own thing that they always fall back on when they try to explain something.
I like Rothbard. He's chocolate mint. I don't know.
Rothbard uses the example of barrels of fish.
Ew, he's fish flavored.
And workhorses, draft horses. So whenever he gives an explanation of how something works in an economic model, he uses barrels of fish and draft horses. Somebody
I'll avoid
like
the horse meat analogy.
Yeah,
we wouldn't want to offend. What's her name? The rich dude's wife.
Oh yeah. T-Bone Pickens. Yeah, his wife. Let's not talk about that. New podcast.
La 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 la. Nobody's saying nothing.
What's his name? Hans Hermann Hoppe likes to use the what's his name? Robinson Crusoe. He likes to use the Caruso example, Crusoe and Friday. Each different economist has these different tricks that he falls back on.
Mm-hmm.
Mises talked about the builder of a house who's building the building, not necessarily a house, but he's building a building out of bricks. So ahead of time, he calculates, he has plans. The plans tell him how many bricks he's going to need. He has a brick supplier. He knows what his budget is. He knows what the brick supplier is going to charge him for the bricks. So he's able to figure out ahead of time how many bricks he's going to need from his plans. He's going to be able to figure out how many he can afford because he knows his budget. And he's going to be able to know if he can buy these or not and if the supplier will supply them through knowing his supplier.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing these factors, he can then make the decision, do I build the house or do I not build the building?
Right.
If he understands all these factors, he does the math, he says, yes, I will build the building. And then he starts and he gets 80% into the building. And he realizes that his plans were falsified or flawed, and he only bought 80% of the bricks that he needs.
Right.
He's already spent his budget. His brick supplier has no more bricks within his budget. So he's stuck. Now, he's worse off than had he never started.
Right.
Because he's already expended all of the energy, all the labor to pay all these people, all the expenses of all the material, the time. And not only does he not capable of finishing the project, but the project is a loss. And he's not only out everything that he's spent, all of his expenses, he's out what he would have earned from the building had he completed it.
Yep.
So just to do the simple math, let's say he was going to make $100, you know, just to make it nice and easy. Let's say $100 would have been the profit that he was going to make if he had built the house and then sold it.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say the house is going to cost him $50 to build, so he was going to make, it's going to cost him $50 to build, he's going to make $100 off of it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not only out the 50, he's lost the potential of the 100.
Right.
And all those people who were depending on having this job through the whole duration of the construction, they all made plans as well.
Right.
Perhaps they have turned down other jobs so that they could do this one.
Right.
So they've not only lost the potential wages from doing this job, they've lost whatever wages that they would have earned had they been in a more stable job with a better plan.
They also lost whatever it was that they were going to invest those wages into.
Yeah, exactly. And all the people down the, as Bastiat would talk about, you know, when he talks about the broken window and what the shopkeeper would or wouldn't pay, wouldn't, you know, spend his money on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in that case, so the window's broke, so the shopkeeper spends money to get the window fixed, and now the guy who fixes the window, he has money, so he goes and buys shoes or whatever. But that doesn't tell you what the shopkeeper loses.
Right.
When he had to pay for the window.
Right.
Now, maybe he won't buy his kids shoes, or maybe he won't buy extra bread, or he won't.
And or then, he won't invest in his business, which would have made him a higher profit, which means he could have afforded to put more into the economy.
Because not only is, in the case of the shopkeeper with the broken window, not only is he now, not only does he not have the money that he spent on the window, but he also doesn't have the goods that he would have purchased with that. And all the people down the line don't have whatever it was that they would have had. And then this takes us back to this construction boom. Well, where's this all coming from?
Yep.
It's coming from a very small group of banks who have a lot of free money on their hands, and they make more money by loaning money because of the fractional reserve banking system. The way fractional reserve banking goes, the Fed dumps money on these particular banks at a discount rate, and then they can take that money, and when they loan it out, they actually create more money in the act of loaning it.
Yep.
And so they don't really even care if these guys ever finish their construction projects.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, if these guys start their construction projects and they get 90% into it and their businesses fail, the bank has already created all that fake money through fractional reserve when they loan the money.
Yeah.
And so they don't care whether this guy defaults or not, because when it looks like he's going to default, what are they going to do with it? They'll just sell it back to a company that's going to go out of business, or not go out of business, but they'll default on that loan and they'll get bailed back out for it again. So in this loop, the banks, by making money off the loaning of the money, making the money when the Fed gave it to them, then making money off of loaning the money on a bad loan, and then making money when the loan defaults, and then making money when the default gets bought out.
Right.
They make money at every stage, but the poor guy with the construction company or the investor who thought this is a good idea, and so he puts 10 or 20 or 30% of his money down and then gets a loan for the rest, he's wiped out.
Yep.
Well, the bank doesn't care. The Federal Reserve doesn't care. The government doesn't care, because they're all in it together and they all made money.
And if it's in the case of, you know, a corporate structure, if the corporation looks at it and says, well, this is a dying area, but we can take out a loan for a third more than what it's going to cost to actually build this.
Yeah. Then for that year, they still show good on their books.
Yeah. They show good on their books. They can spend a year, suck the area dry of the resources, close up shop and leave.
Yeah.
Get a huge tax write-off because they made a loss that second year.
And they don't care. They don't care that all those employees who thought they were going to be working for the next so many years.
Yep.
It doesn't matter.
Nope.
All those people who maybe left other jobs.
No, because that corporation got huge tax breaks also because it hired people in the area.
And it's all a big loop, and the same people make money off of it, and the same people suffer.
Yeah.
And the weird part is, who's paying the taxes that make this scam possible? It's the actual workers, the bricklayers, the guys who are out there putting up those steel beams and putting up the stucco. those guys are getting hit with 60-70% of their wages and is getting hit with taxes.
Yep.
They're paying for the scam that's going to unemploy them.
Yep.
It's befuzzling to me that we tolerate this.
Mm-hmm.
I just shake my head sometimes. And the bad part for me, and I was explaining this to Kai as we were driving down this road and looking at all this, the bad part for me is that once I had read Mises and once I read Rothbard and once I grasped the gravity of what this situation was, I can't even drive down the street now without seeing this stuff in action.
Mm-hmm.
It's everywhere. It's all around me.
Yep.
I see it in the center divide down here in the middle of Springboro. The city comes in and they decide, you know what we need? We need to put a wider divide in the main street going down through the main street. And my first thought is, hey, that will make it safer. You actually put in curbs and you put in a berm there, mm-hmm. and you put in a better divide between the lanes. Now you've got the east and west lanes are divided by a physical barrier and you have less chance of a car going into the oncoming lane. Great mm-hmm. idea, right? Well, sort of. So they ignore the obvious problem with the roads in Springboro, and they funnel all the roads onto the same
Which
two streets.
Being the main problem with the roads in Springboro being that there is one major road through Springboro north and south, and one major road through Springboro east and west. And at about 5 o'clock every day, they come to a complete standstill.
Yeah, and there's always accidents because of it.
Yeah.
So they ignore that. They don't go to the side and create...
including that those two being the main roads that, like, all of the school buses for the 97 schools they've opened in this district.
Mm-hmm. They all dump in there at the same time, plugging everything
up. Yeah, all those schools are on that road.
Yeah. So instead of actually dealing with the problem by creating other arteries that can take pressure off that street, they put this divide in. And then, did you hear my tooth
whistle?
That was
quite a whistle.
Yeah, I'm missing part of a tooth, and it just whistled really loud. That's reminiscent of the movie, what was the name of that movie? It was remade with,
that one, huh?
Yeah, that one movie. One. That guy.
With the guy with
the
face.
Shirt and his face, that
yeah,
one guy.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
The Out of Towners.
Ah, never seen it.
The original one had Jack Lemmon, and I can't remember the lady's name.
If the question is, Kai, have you seen such and such movie? The answer is no.
Okay, we have to give a shout out to the Freedom Fiends, because they play that game all the time.
Yeah,
Michael W. Dean is always like, Nima, did you see this movie? No.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but it's like, no.
They brought that up on their live podcast that they just did, didn't they?
Yeah. Anyway, I missed my ramble. Oh, I know. So rather than the city improving the arteries that go around to relieve the pressure on the main two streets, rather than doing that, rather than, you know, saving lives, rather than preventing accidents and breaking
clearing
up the congestion.
Rather
than doing that, they put in this decorative berm between the east and west lanes and the north and south lanes. And they put all kinds of decorative planting in there,
mm-hmm.
except it's all real high water use and high maintenance
and ugly
stuff. And not
and
attractive.
Ugly.
And so we've had to suffer for about a week continuous huge crews where they shut down the two interior lanes going east and west and north and south. They have to shut down the two interior lanes in order to have this huge crew of guys with dump trucks and all kinds of equipment to go in and dig out last year's decorative plants that are all dead and ugly and put in the new this year's plants that are alive and ugly so that in a few months they can be dead and ugly and so that they have to use massive amounts of watering mm-hmm. to keep we're in Ohio and they have to water.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
If I stopped mowing my lawn, it would be a forest in 2 years.
Yeah.
And they put in plants that require water.
Yeah.
City water.
Yeah.
Don't even get me talking about city water.
City water, i.e. groundwater.
Pretty much, yeah. Our wells here are literally 5 feet deep, and they're in the flood zone of the Great Miami River. So essentially,
we get a thing, a mailer every year that says, you know, By the way, yeah, that's poor design on your water.
Yeah.
And, be aware.
But you're probably okay.
You're in a high-risk area, and keep an eye out for boil watches, and yeah, great, thanks. You know, it's funny, I don't ever have to boil the bottled water I buy at the store.
Really?
It never comes, you know, I never pay for bottled water at the store.
Mm-hmm.
And then have a label on it that says you have to boil this before use. But yet, I have to pay the city
mm-hmm.
to use their water. And randomly, whenever they feel like it,
mm-hmm.
they can just be like, oh, by the way,
you might die.
That's poison.
Or it might be.
Sorry. You know, still owe us for that water, by the way.
Here's the other thing, too. If you water your lawn in this town, they bill you for your sewer according to how much water you use.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're one person living by yourself in the house and you rarely do, you know, like once a week you mm-hmm. do a load of laundry, and let's say you don't have the greatest grooming habits, so once a week you take a shower.
Mm-hmm.
And
wait, you're supposed to take a shower more than once a week?
Only according to the propaganda from the soap companies.
That's right. That's anyway. Right. Unnaturalness.
So you have a single person living in a house by themselves, doing very little laundry, using very little water, but they water their lawn or they grow a garden.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to pay maybe $50, $70 a month sewer bill.
Yep.
Because whatever they're using for water doubles because there's an assumption that they're using that much in the sewer at the mm-hmm. same time. Isn't that lovely?
Mm-hmm.
We need a break. We're at the halfway point, so we need a break for our commercial interruption. Stick with us. We'll be right back. How would you like to support BadQuaker.com and get something nice for yourself at the same time? I want to tell you about Survival Gear Bags. It's run by my friend Kelly, who believes in and adheres to the non-aggression principle. Kelly's customers know him for his great customer service and his personal touch, because Kelly handles all customer service himself. The main focus of Survival Gear Bags is to allow you to build your own custom emergency kits with quality gear. Now, I know this because I bought my bug out bag from Survival Gear Bags over 2 years ago, and I've gone all over the country with it by my side. And you can rest assured that the prices will always be the best they can be at Survival Gear Bags. And if you use the link from BadQuaker.com, they'll probably throw in something for free for you with your order. Now, how do you do this? Well, it's simple. You go to BadQuaker.com. On the right side of the page, click on the picture of the backpack. Then look around at Survival Gear Bags and find the stuff you want. You'll help BadQuaker.com, and you'll support a merchant that's one of us. Now, I want to tell you about another way you can support BadQuaker.com and get something really cool at the same time. Shire Silver. Shire Silver is the proud seller of silver and gold trade cards. Shire Silver believes that silver and gold trade cards will show the world a better way to save, spend, and share precious metals. So what are silver and gold trade cards? There are specific weights of gold and silver laminated inside credit card-sized tradable cards. They're a handy and affordable way to trade precious metals. These cards received nationwide recognition when they were widely used as barter at the New Hampshire Porcupine Festival. You want a beer and a hot dog? Hand them a Shire Silver 5 card and get a Shire Silver 1 spot back as change. So again, what do you do? Well, you go to BadQuaker.com. On the right side, just below the backpack, you'll see the Shire Silver trade cards. Click on those cards and then check out Shire Silver's site. Be sure and watch Ron's video that's right there on the main page. And then swap some of those ridiculous Federal Reserve notes for something of real value. Something you can keep, trade, or give as the coolest gift ever. But be sure and use the link from BadQuaker.com. Thanks, folks. And thanks for sticking with us and all the way through the commercial.
Ooh, speaking of those commercials. Wow, that sounded really really corporate there.
Speaking of that product you just heard about.
Yeah, I actually did want to give a shout out to Kelly's Bags.
Because mm-hmm.
I used that bag that he gave me.
Mm-hmm.
I took that as my luggage.
Oh,
when
yeah.
I went
when you
all over the country for weeks at a time.
Yeah.
Like a crazy woman. And it was great. It held up really well. It was comfortable to wear it. It mm-hmm. it was, I got one of the backpack style ones.
Mm-hmm.
And it was awesome. It was really great.
Great.
So I just wanted to thank you. Yep. Thank you for that. And that was my review. It was awesome.
Yeah, I've had my bag now. I've got just a standard backpack that I got from him like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I've dragged that thing all over the place. I don't wear it.
Right.
Because I didn't really buy it to wear it.
Right.
If I needed to, I could wear it.
Right.
But mostly I just have it. I have everything from a first aid kit to fishing kit to...
Right. Yours is more of a go bag.
Yeah. It's pretty, for anything from the zombie apocalypse all the way to somebody stubbed their toe and needs a Band-Aid.
Yeah. I just shoved some clothes in mine and hustled out the door. But it survived really well. It was really nice. It survived being crushed by the backpacks of several hippie hitchhikers that we picked up and held its shape, and it was nice.
Was it Boing Boing? Is that the name of a real website, or is that just in my mind?
No, that's the name. I think that's the name of a real website. I don't know if that's the website you got.
I'm pretty sure it is. They ran onto a bunch of public domain. A bunch of public domain movie clips from 1900 to like 1950. And you can, if I can remember, I'll put a link on the Bad Quaker website for their archive of these movie clips. Most of them are pretty short. Some of them are like old newsreels. Some of them are blooper films, or blooper reels from actual movies that were filmed.
Mm-hmm.
Old cartoons, old aviation, where a guy's just flying around over Los Angeles.
And then just random ones sitting outside of a restaurant filming the street.
Yeah, that was weird. There's one in L.A. that's just, the camera's just sitting there filming a parking lot of a restaurant. Cars driving by.
Yeah.
No activity, no real, it was weird.
Yeah.
But a lot of old weird stuff. And one of those that we bumped into is an old newsreel from like 1930. We figured out that it was during Prohibition still.
Yeah.
Because they were talking about the
beer
marches in the
U.S. But it had to have been before the war.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it was like 1930, 31, 32 at the very latest, somewhere in there. And the guys, it's propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
It's pro Mussolini.
It's American propaganda.
Yeah, yeah, made by an American a movie company,
mm-hmm.
And it's like one of the standard newsreel type movie that they ran between movies mm-hmm. in the movie houses at the time, and it's just pure pro Mussolini, pro fascist propaganda,
mm-hmm.
and they're talking about how great Mussolini is and how he drained the deadly swamps and now has turned it into farmland that they're mm-hmm. going to feed millions with, and how the people are so happy because everybody has wine there. It's not like here in America where we have to have beer marches to get our beer. They have wine. Everybody has wine. Mm-hmm. Everybody's happy. And Mussolini, it shows Mussolini on his farm
mm-hmm.
cutting. He's got like a sickle in his hand. And a sickle, and he's cutting wheat by hand in his suit.
How appropriate.
Yeah. But he's in this wheat field cutting wheat with a sickle by hand in his dictator's suit.
Yeah.
It shows him
lounging by the railroad tracks.
Yeah, with all his servants.
Waving in a really weird manner.
Yeah, yeah.
I would demonstrate, but you can't see my hands, so...
Anyway, it's hilarious because, there was an actual effort in the early 30s to sell Americans on the idea that this form of fascism that was super popular in Italy and in Spain
mm-hmm.
was, in fact, a really great idea.
Well, and it's actually kind of funny because if you read Mussolini's letters, he was really pro-Roosevelt.
Yeah, yeah. He praised him quite a bit.
He was like, yeah, Roosevelt's a great fascist. And mm-hmm. not actually, literally, he thought he was a fascist. He thought he was on their side.
Yeah,
they were on the same team.
He referred to him as with us in phrases like that. And these were the same thing pretty much in the early 30s was with Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of crossover business, a lot of big corporations that were doing business with the U.S. government and with the German government under Hitler. And, this was open propaganda supporting the same concept.
Yep.
And the thing of it is, if you really get into, there's a number of historians who have done this. As the 30s started to develop, one of the things that Hitler was very confident about was that if anything ever turned bad between him and Stalin,
mm-hmm.
that Franklin Roosevelt would come in on his side.
Right.
Because he felt that Roosevelt was so much more like Hitler, Mussolini, and what's-his-face in Spain. I can't remember his name in Spain.
I don't remember.
But, anyway, Hitler actually felt that Roosevelt was on their side and
right.
much like them because of all the programs he was doing were exactly like,
right.
you know, what Hitler
he
was
doing.
He
was doing fascist programs.
Yeah, it was fascism. Everything that Roosevelt was doing was fascism.
And there was a huge rift between the fascists and the socialists. They really didn't get along.
Right.
Well, I should say the fascists and the communists.
Yeah. Because they're all socialists.
Right, wow.
But, yeah, and he distrusted Stalin greatly.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, he thought, well, you know, Roosevelt will be on my side.
Right.
Then, oddly enough, Roosevelt backstabbed or how do you want to put it? I mean, he turned on Hitler
mm-hmm.
and took the side of Stalin, knowing that Stalin was actively starving people to death in the Ukraine,
mm-hmm.
knowing the horrible things that Stalin was doing.
Yep.
And Roosevelt took his side, and by the mid-30s, I wasn't here.
Right.
Did you do it?
Yeah, it was me.
The U.S. was shipping massive amounts of supplies to Stalin to prop up his regime. And then when the war finally started between Stalin and Hitler, Roosevelt switched and supported Stalin,
mm-hmm.
who was a monster, who killed far more people than Hitler ever thought about killing.
Exactly. That's kind of the thing that I think people don't really, you know, people think, oh, well, we chose the side we chose, and it was a good thing, too, because Hitler, you know, he was so evil, and he killed all these people, and it's true.
Yeah.
But Stalin was
mm-hmm.
worse. He was worse.
He was worse, and so was Mao.
Yeah.
And he was right in there killing people, too.
Yeah. And we were all buddy-buddy with Stalin at that point.
Yeah. Well, and if it wouldn't
and
for
we
us...
And we knew what was going on
mm-hmm.
in the Soviet Union at that point.
Yeah.
We didn't know what was going on in Germany.
Well, Hitler didn't actually start mass killing the Jews in the concentration camps until well into the war.
Mm-hmm.
Before the war started, yes, he was doing horrible things, and they were rounding people up and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But Stalin had been killing them for years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, who are we going to attack? The guy who's been killing massive amounts of people, or the guy who has the potential to kill?
Right.
So that wasn't really a factor. That's an after-the-war lie
right.
that was told to the American people to justify the behavior. But at the time, nobody knew anything about what was going on with Stalin, but a lot of people knew what was going on. Oops, I said that backwards. Nobody
scratch that. Reverse it.
Nobody knew what was going on with Hitler, but a lot of people knew what was going on with Stalin.
Yeah. So there. Did you ever hear the story about Dostoevsky and what happened
Maybe.
To him in the what are you the
gulags?
Gulags, yes. Mm-hmm. It's like the Russian version of the concentration camps.
Sounds like it should be a soup.
It does,
gulag.
Or I don't know, some sort of beef dish, beef gulag. Mmm, tasty.
With egg
and paprika. It must have paprika. Yeah. Well, Dostoevsky was kind of he was writing some not very favorable to the
words?
Communist government.
Not words.
Words,
oh,
yes.
No.
They were words.
You know,
well,
if
they can barely count as words. There's those Russian words. They're like half
they
backwards.
Got, like, backwards letters and stuff. If there's
we
anything.
We just lost all our Russian listeners.
That's okay. No, no, no. They're still trying to hack their way into our website. It's fine. They're good.
Good.
You know, it's a funny thing, though. Statists. Now, liberals will try to tell you, oh, we have to stand up for a right to speak. We have to
mm-hmm.
stand up for our free speech rights. But then they don't.
Right.
But statists in general hate words.
Yeah. Words are like the worst.
Yeah.
Well, because they're the most effective weapon against the state.
Yeah, exactly.
They're the only thing that really works.
Yeah. Anyway, so.
Dostoevsky was in the gulags.
Mm-hmm.
and they would periodically hustle him out, put him out on a firing line, kill every single person up to him, then let him go. And they did this to him several times.
Yeah.
Until he kind of went nutty and stopped writing things and was just very quiet after that.
He became a humble.
He was very docile. He was a tame writer.
I love my gulag. It's so nice.
Mr. Stalin is so good to me.
Obama.
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 If you're playing along at home, kids, now is the time to bring out your Obama doll so that we can beat up on him.
Do you have your Obama doll?
Have you got the whole kit?
You can get the kit at...
The kit. I should make the kit for Porkfest.
I don't know. That could be, if you, especially if you make it like a, what do you call, what are the voodoo dolls?
Voodoo dolls.
Oh, they're called voodoo dolls. What are those voodoo dolls called?
What are those dolls that they use in voodoo?
Voodoo dolls.
Yes.
Anyway, so you can't make it like that so that you can stick pins in his head. You can't do that.
How come?
You could make a straw man, though.
Oh, a straw man, remember,
we talked about that. Make a straw man.
I should make little straw men.
Yeah.
Then I should pin, like, roads. Or, I don't know, what are some other common straw men that people like to
They'll
attack?
Break your door down. The bad guys will break your door down.
Yeah. Or drugs.
Yeah, your children will do drugs.
Oh, that's fabulous.
So anyway, we were gonna beat up on Obama because he signed this thing authorizing everybody in the U.S. as a slave and the government owning all property.
Right.
And there's
newsflash, just coming in. You're a slave.
Yeah.
Oh wait, that's not news at all.
Turns out water's wet and the sun shines.
More on this at 11.
Baggy the cat has joined us. She had come in earlier and wandered around, gave us dirty looks, decided not to attack the mics, and then she left. But now she's hungry, and she's back, and she's looking at us with a certain look that says, you people need to stop this nonsense of talking into these funny fuzzy things and get me food now. But anyway, assuming Baggy doesn't attack anything and we have some peace and quiet, we were going to beat up on Obama for signing this thing.
Right.
But... there's really two trains of thought going on in the internet right now. One group is completely beside themselves, shocked. The Alex Jones, they're coming for us. They're,
right.
You know, the tanks are rolling. We need to
Black helicopters are right over top of you.
Yeah. Load up your ammunition, get your sandbags in front of your living room windows. It's time to, you know, and the other train of thought on the internet is, this is nothing.
Yeah.
There's nothing to worry about. And the truth
is... They won't really use this.
Yeah. And the truth is, to the first camp and to the second camp, yes.
Yeah.
They have had this power right along. They have exercised this power going all the way back to Lincoln. You know, I think most people don't realize that Abraham Lincoln, when the southern states voted... Independent, each state voted separately to break away from the Union. And in anticipation that the state of Maryland might get together, you know, what's the leadership of the state of Maryland? What would that be called? The state
representatives?
Possibly. State assembly, probably. Probably a state assembly.
Probably.
Anyway, whoever those tax feeders were in Maryland, who, you know, robbed people and pretended like they were big shots and ran the place. Before they could meet at the state house and make a vote one way or the other, Lincoln had them all rounded up and arrested and kept them in custody throughout the war. Mm-hmm. Did you know about that?
I didn't know about that one specifically, but I know that he had done stuff like that.
Yeah, that's how he kept Maryland from joining the Confederacy. And he just arrested all the politicians.
Well, that seems effective.
And he did a lot of other stuff, too. He had newspapers raided.
Mm-hmm.
He had presses smashed.
Mm-hmm.
He had newspaper editors arrested. imprisoned mm-hmm. throughout the Civil War?
I would mention that he just randomly started printing money, too, but that would get you off on a rabid rant that you've already done several times.
Yeah, let me explain about greenbackers. Let me just tell you about greenbackers.
Let me tell you something about them greenbackers.
Greenbacking Yankees, that's what the problem with is. Oh, boy. Yeah, no, and it goes back further than that, actually.
You know, they wouldn't be greenbackers if they got one of those sponges on the long stick.
There you go, yeah.
You can scrub.
If you go all the way back to the Alien and Sedition Act,
They're always trying to keep those poor aliens down.
I know. How are they ever going to bring their wisdom from the stars to us? Anyway, going all the way back to, what would that be, the second presidency? I believe that was the second presidency.
Yeah.
When the Alien and Sedition Act was passed, and the vice president was afraid to actually send a letter, afraid that he would get arrested.
Right.
Because his letters were being
Yeah,
because
the vice president was Jefferson at the time, wasn't he?
Yeah. And he was afraid to send a letter because his letters were being read by the government.
Yeah.
And he was afraid of being arrested as vice president. Mm-hmm. He was afraid of being arrested for speaking bad against the government.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is not new.
Words.
Yeah, words. The statists hate words. So this is not new. Franklin Roosevelt.
So anytime someone asks you why you hate roads, you should answer them, why do you hate words?
Yeah. I'm reminded of the Dorothy and the straw man. And tell me, Dorothy, why do libertarians hate roads? But back on the presidential bashing. Madison? Was it Matt? No, Adams.
Adams.
Adams did this. Who was the guy in the War of 1812? The short little fat guy. Can't remember his name. Yeah, that was Madison.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Dolly Madison was his wife, and she.
Yeah.
So Madison Adams.
She made the cupcakes, right?
Yeah, that was her. Actually, I guess her big dish was she had a beef dish that she made that was real popular, and she was good at frying chicken. I think Elton Brown covered that.
Elton.
Anyway, so.
I don't know. I'm not real happy with Elton Brown. Alton Brown at the moment.
What did he do this time?
Oh, he's just, he appeared on Dr. Oz.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. And they spent a good long time, you know, you should eat fat free and low fat, and you can take a pie shell and fill it with sugar free whipped topping and it'll be like a dessert. And yeah, thanks, because, you know, America needs more motivation to eat not food.
Yeah, but anyway,
is an entirely separate rant.
Back on the topic,
and I'm probably gonna get sued for libel or something for that.
Nah.
Sorry.
Nah, what's the odds that the Food Network will ever know that we exist?
I like your show. I love Good Eats.
Hey, that'd be great publicity.
That would be yeah. Awesome. We should just start slamming all manner of celebrities so that we get sued for libel, and then we will be famous.
Yeah, that's what made what's that guy that attacked Paris Hilton? It's like Perez Hilton or something like that.
Yeah,
that's how he got famous.
Yeah, it was attacking celebrities.
And you know, but then again, we'd have to be like that.
Yeah, well, and I don't particularly want to get on the radar of mainstream media.
Yeah,
because
bad enough whatever radar we're on already.
Is
that a drone outside the window?
We need to get a drone sound so that we can just be like, you know, play it and be like, oh, drones are listening.
Anyway, my point that I don't think I ever made with the presidents is that...
So let me interrupt you again.
Uh-huh. But they've always done this.
Yeah.
The presidents have... Whether or not they have the legal authority is not the question.
Yeah.
Because the government really and truly doesn't care what the law
no,
is.
No, they have the guns. Yeah, they don't care about the laws.
They do what they want. And if the law doesn't match, they'll apologize later. You
yeah.
know? And then they'll
After
change the law.
After they've tased and beaten you and thrown you in prison for 3 years.
So they really don't care what the law says. They're going to do what they're going to do.
Right.
And, you know...
And
they cheat. They lie. They steal. Why wouldn't they cheat?
You know, maybe maybe they've signed this stuff and it gives them this authority to do these really horrific things. But if it comes a time when the government decides it wants to do those really horrific things,
yeah,
it really doesn't matter if there's a law there or not. They're going to do it.
Yeah, they did the stuff at Katrina.
Yeah.
And so now the part of this thing that he signed, so now he actually took the authority out of the hands of FEMA to do some of those nasty things that they did in Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And he took it out of the hands of FEMA and he put it in the hands of Homeland Security. So it's like, okay, so this thug is not hitting me with a stick. Now that thug will hit me with a stick.
Right.
I feel so much better now.
Right.
You know, this slave master is beating me. Okay, we're going to make a law so that he can't beat me anymore. And this slave master over here is now going to beat me.
Right.
I feel so much better.
Right.
Where's my cotton? I can't wait to go pick it.
Right.
That's
isn't
not.
There, a, isn't there a pyramid I can build around here somewhere?
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell well, you, I sign me up for the pyramid building. But if there's a choice.
No, I think I'd rather pick cotton. Yeah.
No, because at least with the pyramid building, you get to stomp around in the mud and make bricks. I like playing in the mud.
Well, that's true. But you have to live in Egypt. I'll take Alabama over Egypt anytime.
No, but, well, I suppose it depends on what part of Egypt.
Yeah.
There on the Nile, I would assume it would be pretty humid.
Yeah. And they have crocodiles. They don't have crocodiles in Alabama.
They might. You don't know that.
They in some areas of the South, well, of course, they have alligators.
But, well, Florida has both.
Oh, that's right. They Florida have crocodiles, has crocodiles down in the South
and,
part.
And alligators. Yeah. I know. I've seen them.
Yeah, but alligators are cool.
Alligators are cool. Crocodiles are very big, and they look at you like, what?
Crocodiles are foreigners invading our country. Alligators are the natives.
Alligators are zippy. Zippy little alligators.
So do you think people actually tune into our podcast? Tune in. There's tune an in. Old phrase. Like there's a dial.
Yeah. You've just exploded somebody's headphones.
Somebody's yanking their eye thing out of their ear and throwing it at the windshield right now.
Their eye bud out of their eye ear.
Yeah.
Attached to their iPod.
Throwing it at their eye windshield. Anyway, so I doubt if they have decided to listen to the Bad Quaker podcast so that we can talk about alligators,
they might.
Crocodiles, and
you never know. Cotton. You never know. They listen to us ramble about armadillos.
Hey, they did. That was a popular podcast. I saw the funniest picture of an armadillo the other day, sitting on a Harley. An armadillo sitting on a Harley.
They're actually kind of cute.
Yeah, they are neat. Little, they look like little snakes. Knights in their armor.
Did I tell you I saw a porcupine at the National Socialist Zoo? I mean, the National Zoo in Washington?
Oh, porcupine, yeah.
Yeah.
For some reason, when you said that, I was thinking possum.
No, porcupine. They don't keep possums in the zoo. Possums are free range. Possums can't be held.
Possums are not given in to the man.
They got hands. They will just pick their locks and get themselves out of their little cages.
And go make some moonshine. Well, we better wrap it up.
All right.
So, Kite's been nice having you back on the show. And I know everybody's happy to hear your voice again.
I suppose I shouldn't make an official announcement until I actually purchase the tickets. But I do intend on being at Porkfest representing the Bad Quaker crowd. So if
maybe
you're
with
at
a
Pork
couple
Fest,
other people, too.
Yeah. If you're at Porkfest, you know, look me up and come say hi. And I don't know.
Say hi.
Say hi.
If we're selling something,
yeah, if you
come buy it.
If I'm selling something, come buy it.
Thanks a lot, folks. For more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, go to badquaker.com. And maybe you might see Kai at the Porkfest this year in New Hampshire.
Yay.
Bye, folks.